You're listening to Stateside. If you miss any part of today's show, you can find it on our podcast. Just go to michiganradio.org and click on podcasts to find a link.
Experimentation.
Vision.
The next idea.
People mean very different things whenever they talk about innovation.
It seems there's a new story a week about opioid addiction or meth use. Addiction, and here's an unfortunate way to put it, addiction is trending. Finding a way to help people shake addiction, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or other, is tough. People are different. Alcoholic Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous programs don't work for everyone. So how can dealing with addiction be more accessible, more customized? Well, there's a startup company at Ann Arbor that has an idea. Joining me now for today's The Next Idea are Lisa McLaughlin and Robin McIntosh. They're the co-founders of the startup Workit Health. So let's start out. What is Workit?
Workit Health is a digital startup that meets people where they are and provides them with virtual addiction care from their employers. So it's a 90-day program that people go through from their own home that helps them recover at their own pace from any addiction that they might be struggling with.
Now, you say virtual. Basically, this is online counseling. How does it work?
We combine online exercises with one-on-one coaching from licensed addiction counselors. Somebody enters the program and they start right away with the first section, which we call My Mission. They start right away with goal setting. So they set a goal for themselves. And then with the help of a counselor, they agree upon a tailored to them plan, a care coordination plan. And then they go through a series of exercises and chat with their counselor whenever they need that counselor. And that's it.
Lisa, where did this idea originate?
This is an old idea that Robin and I have been kind of working over in our heads for a number of years. But since we met in the recovery community in 2009, we've been continuously dissatisfied with the app landscape for addiction. There's a host of drink trackers and other kinds of sobriety counters that people can go through. But when you're in the middle of Silicon Valley and there's all these incredible startups coming out with top-notch diabetes care, stroke care, all kinds of really top-notch digital services, you get really disappointed when you search for addiction in an app store. And so really, we've been thinking for a long time that the app store options were mediocre for addiction and that we could do better.
You just mentioned all these apps for all these different things. When did technology really jump into that? Because this is news to me.
With the emergence of the iPhone, I guess, in 2007, that's when you started to see some health companies playing around with this idea of apps and digital interventions. Around 2009, certain startups were tackling this in other areas, for instance, Omada Health and diabetes. So they did a totally digital intervention when it came to diabetes. Studies found that a digital intervention and e-therapy work as well as analog services and in-person.
How do you get funding for something like this?
Well, we identify as a social enterprise, and so you really can draw from a mix of sources to fuel a triple bottom line company. We started with traditional venture.
We've heard of triple bottom line on this program. Basically, business, whether it's profit or nonprofit, with a conscience.
Exactly.
Okay. You guys were in the Bay Area. How did you get from there to Michigan?
I was born in Detroit, and I grew up here. And my time in the Bay Area, I spent about 7 years in Silicon Valley working in the technology field. But over the course of the time that I was away, I had initially gotten sober in the recovery community in Ann Arbor in 2002. And a ton of individuals that I knew started to pass away back home. And I had worked in the clinical community here. I'd worked at the University of Michigan Addiction Research Center. I'd worked with a number of shelters like the Ozone House for runaway and homeless youth. And I just started to see an incredible uptick in death in the community. And it seemed like there was a huge problem here. So as we started to tackle addiction seriously as a company, we wanted to be where we understood the clinical community and where we understood how to make an impact at every level, political, community-based. That's what drew us back. Mm-hmm. And also a real sense of economic inequality with startups. So there's startups all over the country. But the newer markets and smaller startup markets are really special in the sense that entrepreneurs bound themselves together because there's less of us. And it just seemed like a special opportunity to have a clinical community here.
I'm wondering how your experience in Silicon Valley informed your strategy for a startup like this.
I don't hail from Michigan. I'm from Toronto, which is close, but I went to University of Michigan.
We allow Canadians in all the time. It's good. It's
fine. Thank you. Thank you. I have my seat here. But yeah, so when Lisa mentioned wanting to move the company headquarters to Ann Arbor, I was all for it because I know what this town can do, and I know that I graduated with some of the smartest people. I think the talent pool is so rich here. But as far as Silicon Valley, that's where we met, and that's where we worked together in previous startups. There's a real emphasis on lean startup mentality. So there's a real emphasis on agility. and moving fast. And sometimes you do not get that in the academic community. You know, in the academic circles, you move slow, you publish a paper once a year, and it's a, you know, a trickle process. But for us, that agility and that speed is so imperative to solving this rapidly growing epidemic. We need to be able to keep pace with this thing that's plaguing the country at a rapid rate.
So the idea is you take this service, you go to an employer, and you say, make this available to your employees. But the employer never knows who they're serving, right? You guys do this with the employee anonymously. Why is that important?
It's pivotal. The thing that's been missing in addiction care is privacy. So we have a whole host of individuals that are not yet ready to be public about their addictions, that are struggling in silence, and allowing them a way that's completely without shame to access help with the support of their employer is really a game changer for them. Employers really want to see change in their population. They don't like doing this kind of top-down compliance, talk to someone about how they behaved at the party last weekend any more than the people like having that conversation on the receiving end. But there is an understanding that care is needed, and there are embarrassing moments at those parties, and there are conversations that need to be had.
To jump on that on a more macro level, all employers that we talk to, no matter if they're 10,000 people or 30,000 people or 100,000 people, all of them have newspapers and they see headlines. You have this opioid epidemic sweeping the nation and they know it's an issue at work. 7 out of 10 companies in America have opioid problems in their offices. They know it's a problem, but they can't talk about it. It's the pink elephant in the room. So we come in and we say, hey, we have this private intervention. People can sign up with their first names and we'll be transparent about how well they do in the program. We can solve this for you, both with prevention and treatment.
Do you have any major clients as of yet?
Yeah, we do. We work with Steelcase on the western side of the state, and we have some other clients that are in the legal field that would prefer to remain anonymous for obvious reasons.
Right. I understand that.
And then we also work with a number of health centers across the country. We started with Michigan because that's where our roots were, but we've also been partnered with UCLA and been a part of several prestigious accelerators in the healthcare space, mostly in the Southern California market.
How do you know whether WorkIt actually works for people?
We have graduates of the program, and because we started with clinical outcomes as our North Star and we run clinical trials to test that the program works with third parties, because of those two things, we check in early and often with each user. At the beginning of entering WorkIt, they set two goals. So one, they set an addictive behaviors goal. Say I'm drinking. My goal is to get my drinking from 10 glasses a week a night. Well, we rate it on a 1 to 10 measure. So my goal is to go from an 8 to a 4. On an addictive behavior scale. And that can be drinking, that can be opioids, that can be using. But we do have two different tracks. There's the moderation track and the abstinence track. But I set that goal specifically around addictive behaviors. The other measure that we take is a quality of life measure. We use the Cantrell scale. Based on these two things, if we're able to move the needle, if we are able to get them closer to their goal on that sliding scale of addictive behaviors, so if they're able to reduce or meet their own preset goals, and we're able to increase their quality of life, we consider that a success, as do our institutional partners and enterprise clients.
When somebody meets their goal, the one that they set for themselves, is there any follow-up?
Mm-hmm. 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah. We follow up. The beginning of WorkIt is called WorkIt Core, and that is the 90-day program that Lisa was talking about. After WorkIt Core, you enter WorkIt Onward, which is 2 years. It's a 2-year follow-up. It's a really light intervention. We kind of think of it as graduate school, and it's where they deal with meatier life issues like marital strife or, you know, financial well-being and that kind of stuff. But we do check in with them on a monthly basis when they're in Onward. After 2 years, we're a young company. We'll probably have a game plan when it comes to it.
I have to ask you about, you know, employers understand they might have problems within their workforce, but why are they drawn to this program? What benefit is it for them beyond any other program that might be out there or available?
There's really a landscape of solutions that are poorly matched to this problem. So there's these employee assistance programs that are really like call referral centers where you call them if you're getting a divorce, you call them if you want to work on your will, you call them if you want to work on a rehab location problem, but they're not necessarily providing deep care. And then there's a host of new entrants to the market that are really digital health companies that are saying, hey, we'll give you pedometers, we'll track your steps, we'll be sort of well-being coaches. But you don't want to take a person with an opioid addiction and give them a well-being coach and say, here's a pedometer. That's not going to help with your painkiller problem. And so we approach companies that know they have this problem on multiple levels. They're self-insured, they see it in their claims data, they see it in their workman's comp data, and they know that they need something more targeted.
How do the costs of WorkIt compare to other programs?
Well, because of the digital nature of our program, we work it really with really healthy margins. So we're $750 flat fee for every person that enters WorkIt. That compares the next step up in care from a digital intervention like WorkIt would be something like an outpatient service, and that can run you $650 a day. So we're a lot cheaper.
So what's the long-term goal for the firm? Where are you going with this?
We imagine that we're building the equivalent of a Mayo Clinic for addiction. We started with the WorkIt Care program, laying the clinical groundwork and curating the best of the best faculty and medical doctors to support our initiative. And from there, we really want to extend it. We have really, really bold goals. We want to see a cure for addiction. We want to see new services and new frameworks and new ways of talking about this problem. And we're building that bit by bit, starting with the pieces that we know best and that we're best suited to execute on and moving out from there to more medical interventions.
To piggyback on that, I think we would like to be a household name. There's this saying in the recovery community that AA is the last house on the block. And upon deep personal inspection of that theory, we found that to be true. You know, this is a system that we know intimately as patients, as designers, and it's the only house on the block for a lot of people because of the prohibitively expensive and inaccessible nature of addiction treatment. And so we want to be another house on the block.
We've been talking to WorkIt co-founders. That's spelled W-O-R-K-I-T, and all you have to do is put that into Google and you will find their site right away. Co-founders are Lisa McLaughlin and Robin McIntosh. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
This was fun.
Support for The Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.